This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and www.acornradio.org. A podcast will be available of this show on these websites and affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. Today we're talking in Asunción, Paraguay, to Ode Lanardi, who is the civic engagement advisor for Oxfam in, of all places, one of our favorite cities, Lima, Peru. Welcome to Wade's World, Ode.
Hey, Wade. How's it going?
It's going great. We're on another organizers forum, so people are going to learn lots about Paraguay over the next couple of shows. But today we're going to talk about what's happening in Peru. Now, You were just saying recently you've been in Peru almost exactly 3 years.
Exactly. 3 years on Monday.
Oh, time flies. Well, Circe, for those people who are listening who aren't really familiar with Oxfam, some people in the UK certainly are, some people in Canada, but a lot of our listeners in Arkansas don't. What does Oxfam do? It's not an agricultural group. What is Oxfam?
So Oxfam is an international non-governmental organization. We're a confederation, and so Oxfam exists in a number of different countries across the world. United States, Canada,
certainly Britain, India.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've run into them a lot over in Africa at different times.
Exactly. So. And Oxfam actually operates in more than 100 countries internationally. Our general mandate is essentially fighting for a world without poverty, which is maybe a little bit ambitious, but
we're for that.
Exactly. And, we have different campaigns that we're working on. One important global campaign has to do with inequality, and inequality in different senses of the word, economic inequality, focusing a lot on fiscal justice, that big companies and corporations are paying the taxes that they need to pay, indigenous land rights, climate change. Depending on where Oxfam is located, the focus and the campaigns change slightly. So for Oxfam in Peru, we actually have two main programs. Our first program is on indigenous land rights and extractive industries. And our second program, which is the program I work in, is fiscal justice and active citizenship to confront inequality.
And so you've been there 3 years on this program.
In case you go first.
And what does it mean to be involved in the civic engagement program? I think you mentioned you were largely working with young activists.
Exactly. So I've been learning a lot. I find myself really, really lucky to actually be connected directly with different civil society actors playing a very protagonistic role in different movements and trying to achieve transformation on the economic and social scale in Peru. And so what I actually do, I do work with young activists between the ages of 18 and 30 primarily, principally based out of Lima, because that's where our office is.
Sure.
So it makes more sense. And actually, what we've been doing is we've been co-constructing together Oxfam with four other activist groups made up of young people. We've been co-constructing what we call the Actuape Labs to Confront Inequality. And what these are, they are capacity-building spaces for young activists. So one of the reflections that we've had, along with some of these young activists who have been allies in campaigns that we've had in Oxfam in the past, is that, okay, what does civil society need in Peru? What do young activists need in Peru? And in end of 2014, 2015, it was really a game changer in Peru for young activists because there was actually a labor law that was implemented, which affected young people in a very important sense, and it was a discriminatory law which removed a lot of labor rights for young people. It made it so that they actually didn't have access to the same amount of days for vacation, healthcare, and so on. And this law went through at a very strategic time, which was just when everyone was going to be leaving Congress to go on vacation. And there were only two congressmen out of the whole Congress that voted against this law. And so the law actually went through. And so what ended up happening after that is for four consecutive weeks, there were massive protests, one protest per week for essentially a month. And this happened over Christmas, this happened over New Year's. And
it was on the eve of a coming presidential election, was it not?
Well, this was actually before the presidential election.
It would have been within a year or so before.
2 years before, technically, because this was in 2014, 2015.
It was in
2016, then there were the other presidential elections.
Right.
And what's interesting about this law is that it's the first time in probably over two decades, no, since the 90s, that a law that actually was passed was repealed. And this was thanks to social movement. And not just social movement, but a social movement that was led by principally young people. And so kind of like Occupy Wall Street managed to mobilize people who weren't necessarily politicized, but it managed to kind of spark interest and awaken this notion that, hey, you know, we are the 99%. Something similar happened in Peru with this Les Pulpines, where young people felt like, hey, we're workers, we have rights, and we don't agree with this law.
And you got there sort of right in the middle of that, or right after it?
Right after it. And so when I got to Peru, I was learning a lot about the political context, and I started reading as much as I could, and I started connecting with some of these young people who had played a key role in that particular social movement. And one of the things that, you know, we were evaluating with some of our young activists was, okay, well, What was the result of that? One, luckily, they were able to repeal this law, but one of the kind of critiques that the young activists had towards themselves was that, you know, they were saying no, 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 but they didn't really have the capacity to propose an alternative law, right? And so what they said to us in Oxfam is, and it's one of the reasons they were attracted to start an alliance with us, was, hey, you know, we were really interested in the fact that you guys are developing content, information, and you're essentially, this strengthens our arguments. This allows us to actually have a capacity to propose and not just protest. And this is key to you know, what we're doing as activists. And so that was why a lot of these young activists had, you know, had decided to actually start an alliance with Oxfam in the first place. And so,
does Oxfam have been in Peru for a period of time?
Oxfam has been in Peru for decades, no? And traditionally working a lot with indigenous populations. There are a lot of socio-environmental conflicts in Peru because of extractive industries. And so we've traditionally worked with a lot of indigenous organizations. And we have worked with activist groups, but only recently, no, in the last few years. And it's when Oxfam in Peru also made a shift towards being what we call in Oxfam call WIN. So it's a worldwide influencing network. So instead of just focusing on programs and projects, we focus also on influence and changing policies. And so that has to do, obviously, with trying to influence policies and decision makers, but it also has to do with trying to shift public opinion, no? And have a strong kind of communicational strategy as well. So, yeah, with these activist groups coming out of actually in the 2016 election, so to go back to what you were kind of asking about with regards to, okay, so what happened, no, between the Les Pulpines, no, which was this horrible law that luckily got repealed, and, you know, 2016, which we know there were presidential elections in 2016. So in 2016, Oxfam, along with a number of different civil society organizations, so we're talking about indigenous organizations, unions, feminist organizations, activists, investigative journalists, we built a coalition, and the goal of the coalition was to monitor candidates' campaign promises with regards to different themes that touch on inequality. And so we had two different themes that we were working on, economic inequality and environmental inequality. And on the economic justice side, we had three kind of subcategories: employment, which focused a lot on labor rights and collective negotiation and so on, and raising the minimum wage. We had investment in social programs, and then we also had fiscal justice. On the environmental side, we had environmental governance, so everything that has to do with laws and previous consultation and so on. And then we also had access, use of natural resources. And so with these different civil society organizations, what we did is we developed a number of demands and sub-demands. And those sub-demands turned into indicators. And those indicators is what we used to essentially revise government plans of these different candidates to see, hey, how are they measuring up, in terms of employment, in terms of environmental legislation? Were they aligned with our demands that were developed with civil society? And we developed a kind of stoplight system where we would grade these candidates based on their promises. So green for aligned, red for regressive, yellow for in the middle, and gray for completely avoiding the theme or the subject in their promises.
So in integrating these social movements, were you just working with certain activists or leaders, or there were meetings that were involved, or give us some sort of a snapshot of sort of what the organizing methodology really looked like?
So it's important to mention the key actors behind this, and there were three. The organizing behind it was interesting because it was the first time that these three actors were really collaborating and organizing together. So we had your traditional civil society, right? NGOs, different indigenous organizations, unions, the traditional, what we call old society or old civil society. And then on the other side, you have everything that kind of represents, the movement and activism on the street. And so you have a lot of young activists, university students. But here we're talking about not really formalized spaces. So they're not registered as not-for-profits or anything. They're different kind of groups of activists, essentially.
Informal, as you said.
Exactly. Right. And then the other group, which was also very key, had to do with alternative media and investigative journalists. And this is important because in Peru, media is highly concentrated. Probably 80 or 90% of media is concentrated. And so,
and by concentrated, you mean under single ownership?
Exactly, exactly. So you have one group, it's called El Grupo El Comercio, which essentially owns most media outlets. So the big newspapers, the big news shows and whatnot. Radio, essentially. TV, radio, newspapers.
And that's a Peruvian company, or it's owned outside?
It's Peruvian, but it's primarily like a kind of like a family consortium, I guess you could say. And you can find out a lot about it just on the internet, just Googling El Comercio, Grupo de Poder El Comercio. And so what we did with the elections is organizing these three different groups of actors around a common goal, which was tackling inequality and monitoring campaign promises of these candidates. And yes, to answer your question, we had probably weekly meetings. So the first step was actually being on the same page in terms of our demands, because even though you have a bunch of different unions working to improve labor rights and collective negotiation, we had to have a consensus in terms of what our demands would be and what our indicators would be. And that was the same for all of the other categories.
And these were meetings about the leadership of these different actors?
So in these meetings at the beginning, the primary actors were kind of your old civil society. And what was interesting is when we launched the campaign and we launched the digital platform as well in February 2016, one of the kind of the values added, I guess, or the value added and the bonus and like essentially what was seen as super positive from that event was the fact that you did have these three actors in the same room and the young activists as well. And so at that point, you know, the main protagonists were going to be investigative journalists and old civil society, but young activists were never really part of our original strategy. But after that launch, a lot of the colleagues, my colleagues at Oxfam and myself as well, we were saying, hey, you know, these young activists have played a crucial role in the past, are playing a crucial role right now, and they need to play a crucial part in the work that's coming. And so we need to involve them in a more meaningful manner in all of the work that has to do with the elections. And so from that moment onwards, the activists were also sitting at the table with our old civil society actors.
And we're talking to Ode Lenardi, who's the civic engagement advisor for Oxfam in Lima, Peru. So there were 10, 15 people at the table. There were 25. I mean, I'm still trying
yeah.
to get
so,
you know me. I'm a nuts and bolts
no,
kind of guy. I'm
it's
still
perfect.
Trying to get a handle
no,
on exactly
there were like 30 people around the table
okay.
because these 30 people also represented probably around 20 organizations and 20 different civil society spaces.
So, what do you call them a space? What is a civil society space? Is this Oxfam jargon or whatever? I'm not sure.
No.
Listeners know. Is this a room or is it a non-physical kind of concept you're talking
no,
about?
No, because there are civil society organizations, which I personally see as slightly more formalized, right?
Like Oxfam.
Exactly.
Right.
No, and then you have other... They're not organizations, they're kind of collectives. We call them in Spanish are colectivos juveniles. So they're kind of activist collectives. And so when I'm talking about civil society spaces, I'm referring to these less formalized organizations because they're not registered as not-for-profits. They're all working in a voluntary capacity. No one's getting a salary or a wage. That's what I mean when I'm talking about civil society, other civil society spaces, because they're not consolidated like some of these other more formalized civil society organizations.
Are they groups?
Yeah, they're definitely groups. Kind of like
so we could call them other civil society groups.
You could, yeah.
So just for the listenership here and, you know.
You can call them whatever you want to call them, Wade.
No, I just want to make sure we have our arms around this, that's all. Okay,
yeah.
So... And then because they'd been so active in the 2015,
uh-huh.
clearly they were ready to, you know, gear up on 16 as well. Is that where
exactly.
This coalition was going?
And what's interesting, too, is that on the side of these young activists, this connected them with the content, you know, and the experts who are developing those contents. So this allowed them to bring back to their spaces some of this content. And so one example that Jorge Rodriguez, who's the coordinator of a youth group, we'll call it, youth activist
youth
group,
youth
yes.
Group. Yeah. that way we don't see it as like a community center.
Exactly.
Or something. Yeah.
So he's the coordinator for a youth activist group, which is called the Foro Juvenil de Izquierda. And during the elections, his youth activist group, along with a number of other organizations, were trying to organize so that Keiko Fujimori, who's the daughter of Alberto Fujimori, who was a dictator, and who was in prison for crimes against humanity. They were organizing so that she actually didn't win the election.
She got an amazing amount of support.
She sure did. But she didn't win the election.
No, she didn't.
And one of the things that was key and that he and other activists mentioned was that they were coming into our spaces, our ActuaPay spaces with these civil society actors, with this coalition that we were building. And then they came out with a lot of content. And so they were coming out with Oxfam briefs, investigations, and they were going with all of that information, piles of investigations to their spaces. And this was really important because Oxfam, as an international confederation, we can actually be for or against any candidate. We can criticize all candidates, but we can't be partisan, and we can't take one side over another. And so this also allowed us to kind of feed the resistance, if you will, without actually saying that, hey, Oxfam is against a candidate. And so our investigations managed to go into those spaces, and those activists, based on their readings, they were having discussions, they were debating, and they were actually making proposals. And what's interesting too is that 16 organizations in Peru got Pedro Pablo Kuczynski, who at that time was a candidate and got in, was voted in as a president, they got him to sign a minimal agenda. No, so this was a series of minimal kind of demands from civil society. And obviously, Oxfam, it wasn't just our content that fed that minimal agenda, but it did play a key role. And
by content, you mean research.
Exactly. Right. And so we come up with a number of briefs, briefs focused on inequality and primarily economic inequality. And the other thing, too, is that in the 2012 elections, Keiko was also running. And from 2012 to 2016, her discourse had changed drastically, and so civil society had to adjust their discourse drastically as well, because before, where she, they had focused more on human rights violations that had happened during the previous Fujimori dictatorship, her discourse had changed in the 2016 elections, recognizing that there were mistakes, but that this new government would be different. And so they actually had to focus not so only on human rights, but on the economic facts, in terms of what was she promising for labor, what was she promising for wages, what was she promising in terms of investment in different programs, and catch her in those false promises, essentially, but with pure economic
States,
data.
We used to think false promises meant something. Peru must be just behind us now.
Yeah. And so that, though, evolved. And so we organized a number of different actions during the elections. We organized a candidates forum where we actually got representatives of the different parties to take a stance in terms of our demands that we had already developed with civil society actors. And
most of this was in Lima or outside?
All of this was in Lima. No, okay, also based because that's where we're based out of, and in terms of limited resources.
City. Yeah, it's one of the bigger cities.
Exactly. And so after the elections, we sat down and we entered in a huge process of evaluation with all of our allies, old civil society, young civil society, and alternative media. And we said, hey, what was our value added during this whole time? And what should we continue doing in the future? Now, okay, we know that Pedro Pablo Kuczynski got into power, and we'll be seeing what he's actually fulfilling in terms of his campaign promises, but what should be the work moving forward, and what was our value added and during this whole electoral process? And the actors, all of them, pretty much said the same thing, and it was three things. One, they said the kind of that intergenerational connection between young and old civil society was key. And on the side of the young activists, that allowed them to have that direct contact with content. On the side of the old civil society, it allowed them to actually test a lot of their content, no, on the population at large, and say like, okay, is this relevant as well, right? Are we actually developing content that's relevant to the problems of society, and how can we adjust the way that we're communicating it in a way that's more accessible to the population, and especially the younger population? And so that was one key factor, no, that intergenerational connection. The other thing was everything that we did in terms of communication and campaigns. So taking our allies' agendas and their content and Oxfam content and translating it in a language that was more accessible and digestible for social media and for a larger public was also extremely important. And
social media was a big part of the alternative media, I'm assuming.
Exactly. Like Facebook, for example, now we have over 60,000 followers, no? And a ton of conversation and dialogue and debate. And people are talking about inequality in Peru, which is something that they weren't talking about before. So we have managed to place that term and that idea and the outrage, you know, in terms of inequality in the imagination and in the conscience of people. So we have, now we said, intergenerational connection, we have communication and campaigns and that translating of content into social media friendly material. And then the other thing too that was recognized as really important was content, no, was information, just that hard data information, no, and one of the things that the young activists and even a lot of the social, a lot of the civil society organizations said that they needed was, okay, well, we need to be better in how we're communicating, no, so we need communication tools and tactics, and so all of those three things, no, the intergenerational approach, the translating, and the communications, and then the content turned into what is our current strategy, which is between Oxfam and four activist organizations, which are what we call the Actuapay Labs to confront inequality. And these are capacity building spaces for young organized activists to essentially strengthen their ability to confront inequality and to transform their society.
So we have gotten very deeply into Peru, and that's what we can expect, and the time has just flown by here as we find out more about what's happening in Lima. So the future looks good for these young people over the next period of time.
Yeah, I guess that's a loaded question, Wade. I think it's young people who are...
You're optimistic about the work of this project.
I'm definitely optimistic. And what's great is that the focus of the project was really on co-creating something. And when I say co-creating, what does that mean? That means that you're sitting at a table with four other very different actors and you're working together in a horizontal way. So no one actor. We're talking about Oxfam, an international non-governmental organization. We have around the table Oxfam Tierra Activa, which is an environmental network of young activists, you know, confronting climate change. We have the Foro Juvenil de Izquierda that does work with unions and tries to influence in terms of policies at the national level. We have PASOS, Arte para la Educación, which is a community organization that does grassroots work in their district, which is Villa El Salvador, which is one of the poorest districts in Lima and one of the most violent ones as well. And they use art to educate in gender and environmental issues. And then we also had CAUSAIPAC, which is a group of university students who focused on communications. And so,
and if
four
people
groups,
want to know more about this, mm-hmm. how would they get a hold of you or these projects or Oxfam in Peru?
So Oxfam in Peru, if you literally just put Oxfam in Peru in Google, you will find our webpage. Actuapay, which is this initiative that I've been talking about and the labs and some of the methodologies and so on.
Why don't you go ahead and spell that, yeah.
Actuapay, so it's just https://:// I hope I'm getting the order right. And then it's actua.pe. And that's the website. And ActuaPe, it's the same thing, ACTUA, but this time underscore PE for Facebook. And so you can see a lot of our campaigns and our graphics and our investigations there
as well.
And what
we call your content. You can see the content. I
exactly.
I've learned the whole jargon of Oxfam.
The content.
All of our listeners.
Yeah.
So glad to have Aude Lunardi here. Who's,
Lunardi.
He did a great job for Acorn Canada and the UK and has been just doing a wonderful job in Peru with Oxfam. This has been Wage World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard. And as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wage World.